The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. You know, if you look across American history, there's this one constant, this one factor that really shapes presidential power more than maybe anything else, and that's war.
Mm-hmm.
So today we're digging into Michael Beflos's really definitive historical examination, Presidents of War.
Yeah, and it's more than just a history book, really. You could almost call it a manual for understanding how the American system operates under extreme stress.
Okay.
Our goal here is to trace how the presidency itself has been, well, fundamentally changed, sometimes irrevocably, by conflict. We're looking less at, you know, battles and tactics.
Right.
And more at the decision-making behind the scenes, the constitutional friction, and honestly, the psychological burden war places on the commander-in-chief.
And that's so relevant because we're constantly debating executive power today, aren't we? Whether it's about military interventions or drone strikes, things like that.
Exactly.
Understanding the history of how presidents gain that power helps us evaluate what's happening now. Are they following precedent or, you know, maybe setting a dangerous new one?
Precisely. This book shows that shift, that movement of power from, let's say, the mini Congress, the deliberative body, to the one, the president. And understanding that journey is just essential for, well, for anyone engaged in civic life.
Okay, so let's talk about the author guiding us, Michael Beflos. I mean, he's a huge name in presidential history, right?
Oh.
Recognized for decades, works like Presidential Courage.
Absolutely. He's preeminent. But what really makes his approach stand out, I think, is how he goes beyond just the standard histories.
How so?
Well, he combines really meticulous, deep archival research, we're talking, digging through one secret papers, presidential diaries, even those private White House audio recordings.
Wow.
He combines that with a real psychological insight. He's trying to get at the why.
Not just what happened, but why they chose that path.
Exactly. He wants to reconstruct the pressure cooker of those decisions, you know, reveal the human drama, as he puts it, the personal anguish behind these world-altering choices.
That feels crucial.
It is, because he argues, quite convincingly, that deciding to go to war isn't just ticking a policy box. It's this incredibly profound moral personal test. And understanding the character of the person making that call is vital to understanding why things unfolded the way they did.
So the book itself, it covers a lot of ground.
Oh, absolutely. It's sweeping. It's chronological, starting right near the beginning, James Madison, War of 1812, and then it marches forward to the really big ones, Mexican-American War, Civil War, both World Wars, Korea, Vietnam, right up into the, well, the modern conflicts.
And the core idea threading through all that.
And the central thesis really is this tension. The Constitution clearly gives Congress the power to declare war. It's meant to be, you know, slow, deliberate.
Right. Check the executive's power.
But Beflos shows how the reality, the urgency of crises, the nature of presidential leadership has meant that war consistently acts as the main driver, the catalyst for expanding executive power, often pushing past that original constitutional design.
So the book basically tracks how we went from the ideal on paper to the reality on the ground when, you know, things get serious.
That's a great way to put it. War fundamentally changes the job description of the president. Beflos zeroes in on those key moments, those pivot points where presidents chose war, and he details not just the political math, but the long-term constitutional fallout for American democracy itself.
Okay, let's unpack that historical progression then, because it sounds like a pretty clear trajectory. You said it starts with the constitutional ideal, with James Madison and the War of 1812.
Yeah, Madison, the father of the Constitution. And he really was, especially early on, a reluctant warrior. He felt deeply bound by that constitutional script.
So he waited for Congress.
He did. He faced enormous pressure from the war hawks. In Congress, they were itching for a fight with Britain. But Madison laid out his case and waited for their official declaration. It's kind of the system working exactly as intended by the founders.
But, oh, that respect for Congress doesn't quite hold, does it? The next big case seems like a major shift. James K. Polk, Mexican-American War.
Polk. Yes, this is arguably the critical turning point. This is where the president stops just reacting or waiting and starts, well, actively engineering the crisis.
Engineering it? How?
Polk was driven by manifest destiny, this idea of coast-to-coast expansion. He wanted California, New Mexico, huge territories. Problem was, Congress wasn't necessarily eager for a war of conquest.
So he found a way around them.
He did. It was, frankly, a pretty cynical but clever move. He ordered U.S. troops into this disputed border zone land both Mexico and the U.S. claimed. Predictably, Mexican forces eventually attacked the American soldiers.
And then he could claim.
Exactly. He went straight to Congress declaring, American blood has been shed on American soil. He framed the whole thing as a defensive necessity, responding to foreign aggression.
Wow. So he manufactured the incident to force Congress's hand.
That's the crucial precedent Polk sets. He showed that a really determined president could basically compel Congress to go along by creating a situation, a fait accompli, and then wrapping it in patriotic urgency. It's a playbook that gets used again.
And that precedent, that playbook, really sets the stage for the absolute ultimate test of power. Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War, I mean, the nation was literally falling apart.
Right. And facing that existential threat, Lincoln undertakes the most dramatic expansion of executive power the country had ever seen, or arguably has seen since.
What kind of things did he do unilaterally?
Just extraordinary actions. Blockading southern ports, spending money from the Treasury without getting Congress's okay first, and maybe most controversially, suspending the writ of habeas corpus.
Okay, let's pause there. Suspending habeas corpus. For listeners maybe not familiar, what does that mean in practical terms? What's the impact?
It's fundamental. Habeas corpus is the right that says the government can't just lock you up indefinitely. They have to show a reason, bring you before a judge. It prevents arbitrary imprisonment.
So suspending it means?
It meant Lincoln allowed the military to arrest and detain potentially thousands of people suspected Confederate sympathizers, dissenters without trial, without that judicial review. A massive move.
The justification must have been enormous.
It was survival. His argument boiled down to his primary oath, to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. He believed that if he had to temporarily override parts of the Constitution, like habeas corpus, to save the whole thing, to save the Union, then that was his obligation.
Saving the whole by violating a part.
That's the idea. And that concept, that justification, echoes through almost every major crisis that follows.
Which leads us right into the Cold War. And you mentioned the formal declaration of war starts to seem, well, almost quaint, obsolete.
Yeah, it effectively obsolete in practice. You see this pivot dramatically with Harry Truman and the Korean War in 1950.
How did he handle that?
Truman basically went around Congress. He never asked for a declaration of war. Instead, he framed the entire massive intervention as a United Nations police action.
A police action for a major war.
Exactly. It set the template. It showed future presidents a way to commit huge numbers of troops to large-scale, long-term conflicts without ever needing that formal declaration from Congress, with all the debate and scrutiny that entails.
Which brings us inevitably to Lyndon Johnson and Vietnam, often seen as the tragic endpoint of this trend.
It really is the tragic culmination in many ways. LBJ used the Gulf of Tonkin incident in 64, an event Beschloss describes as murky and likely exaggerated,
right,
to push a very broad resolution through Congress.
The Gulf of Tonkin resolution.
Yes. And functionally, it acted like a blank check. It gave Johnson the authority he felt he needed to escalate the war dramatically over years without ever having to go back for that politically difficult formal declaration.
And Beschloss gets into the personal cost for Johnson.
Deeply. He details the immense private torment, the sleepless nights, the feeling of being trapped. And it led to that infamous credibility gap where the pessimistic intelligence reports he was getting privately were completely at odds with the optimistic picture he felt forced to paint for the public. A devastating situation.
Okay, let's step back from the timeline and look at some of the big themes Beschloss pulls out from all this history. The first one sounds pretty clear. The rise of the imperial presidency in wartime. It almost seems inevitable.
It does have a sense of inevitability, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Military crises demand speed, secrecy, decisive action. And those are qualities that just naturally align more with the executive branch,
yeah,
than with the slow, messy, deliberative process of Congress.
Right. Congress is built to debate, not react instantly.
Precisely. So Beschloss shows this steady, maybe inexorable shift of power from the legislature to the president is really rooted in the practical demands of war itself. Which, of course, fundamentally challenges those original checks and balances the founders envisioned.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what they'd think now. Another theme that really struck me from your description is the personal side of it, the human dimension of command.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the most powerful parts of the book. We tend to see these presidents as, you know, historical figures, almost abstract. But Beschloss really brings home the immense psychological weight.
Like Lincoln's melancholy.
Lincoln's deep melancholy, exactly.
Yeah.
Or Johnson's private anguish over Vietnam. These weren't just policy choices. They were profoundly personal, moral calculations that cost these leaders dearly, often their own peace of mind. It really underscores why the individual character, the integrity of the president, becomes so incredibly important in wartime.
And maybe that character sometimes enables another theme you mentioned, the art of presidential deception. It sounds like presidents often felt they had to mislead.
It's a recurring theme, definitely. Presidents, often convinced they alone know what's best or have the full picture, resort to manipulation, secrecy, sometimes outright falsehoods to achieve their aims.
Like Polk provoking Mexico.
Polk is the classic early example. But Beschloss points to others, like FDR effectively waging an undeclared naval war against German U-boats in the Atlantic well before Pearl Harbor, while publicly insisting on neutrality.
So the takeaway for us.
It really highlights the need for citizens, for all of us, to maintain a healthy skepticism, you know, especially when we're hearing justifications for potential military action. Media literacy becomes crucial.
And the last big theme seems to be about control, or the lack of it, unforeseen consequences.
Yes. Wars almost never go according to the plan hatched in the Oval Office. It's the constant danger of hubris in leadership.
Examples.
Well, the Spanish-American War was sold as a splendid little war, right? But it resulted in a long, bloody insurgency in the Philippines. Woodrow Wilson's lofty idealism about making the world safe for democracy completely collapsed in the messy realities of the Treaty of Versailles.
So presidents might start the war.
But they quickly discover they can't fully control where it leads. Beschloss really shows that the moment that decision is made, control often slips away in ways they never anticipated.
You know, amidst all this complex history, Beschloss has a way of phrasing things that just cuts right to the core. The book seems full of memorable lines.
It really is. He manages to capture the gravity and the sweep of history in these concise, powerful statements. They stick with you.
What's one that really stands out?
Well, just stating the fundamental weight of it all. The decision to take a nation to war is the most profound choice any president can make. It just emphasizes the ultimate nature of that test.
And then summarizing the impact on the office itself, every president who has led America into war has changed the presidency itself. It highlights that consistent expansion of power we've been talking about.
Yeah, that's key. And this one really nails the central constitutional tension, the core argument of the book. The Constitution may give Congress the power to declare war, but history has given presidents the power to make war.
Ooh, that says it all, doesn't it?
It really encapsulates the whole story.
And one more, bringing it back to that human element.
This one. Presidents discover in war what they never knew about themselves in peace. It just perfectly captures how crisis strips everything away and reveals true character, true capability, or the lack thereof.
So, thinking about all this history, how does it apply to us today? What are the real-life applications?
Well, the most direct link is understanding modern war powers. When you hear debates about, say, drone strikes or military actions taken without explicit congressional approval.
Like interventions that aren't called wars.
Exactly. This book gives you the historical context. You can see how current claims of executive authority often trace their lineage directly back to precedents set by Polk or Truman or others. It helps you analyze those claims more critically.
It's not happening in a vacuum.
Not at all. And beyond the politics, there are leadership lessons here for almost anyone. The case studies, especially maybe the tragic ones like Wilson or Johnson, are powerful cautionary tales.
About hubris.
About hubris, yes, but also about the danger of isolating yourself. They underscore the absolute necessity for leaders in any field, really to actively seek out dissenting opinions, to fight against groupthink, especially when you're in a crisis. Don't just listen to the people telling you what you want to hear.
That's universally applicable. And ultimately, the book seems like a call for civic awareness.
I think so. Beschloss seems to suggest that the only real lasting check on this presidential impulse towards war isn't just the Constitution on paper, but the active vigilance of citizens and the willingness of Congress to assert its own authority. So in that sense, the book is vital civic instruction. It equips you to be that informed, maybe skeptical participant democracy requires.
So as we wrap up, what's the single biggest takeaway for you from Presidents of War?
For me, I think it's the realization that this massive shift in war power from the legislature to the executive wasn't really one big event. It was incremental, slow steps, precedents building on precedents across decades.
No single moment where everything changed.
Exactly. It was a slow drip. And because of that, it makes the character, the judgment, the basic integrity of the individual in the Oval Office arguably the single most critical factor when it comes to the ultimate questions of war and peace. Who that person is matters immensely.
Yeah, that really lands. For me, what resonates most is that contrast Beschloss draws between the enormous expansion of presidential power during wartime and the profound personal cost, the misery that often came with it for the presidents themselves.
The weight of command.
Right. It's easy to focus on the grand strategy or the political wins and losses, but he keeps reminding us of the human toll, the sleepless nights, the anguish. It underscores that these figures, even as they shaped millions of lives and the fate of the nation, were still fundamentally human, grappling with impossible choices. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.